Oh, welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. Hello, Larry.
Hello. I understand you've been attacked by religious nutbags today.
Oh, my. You know, I am just a whisper from turning off my email. I'm not going to do it because I do receive a lot of letters from really wonderful people who have come to know Yahweh, and are part of their journey to Yahweh has been aided by the translations that we've done and have put online, and they want to share their growth, and it's wonderful to meet them. And so, and that's the majority of the email. But oh my goodness, the more Shattering Myths grows, the more I receive emails from crazies. And the growing theme of the crazies is the private voice. They either claim
you'll get a lot of that. They're the really deep ones. They know God.
Because he talks to them privately, and many of them he speaks to them in tongues, and the others they won't quite say how he speaks to them. But over the past 12 years, I would suspect that I've received 1,000 letters from individuals who claim that God speaks to them privately. And yet, in 100% of the cases, I've not had a single exception. What they say that God tells them privately is contrary to what he tells us publicly.
In his words. So he makes himself a liar when he gets in secret, kind of like a politician. Says one thing and then behind closed doors says another.
That is correct. Yeah. And so what I tell them all is I said, I've read what you've told me. I've read what Yahweh said. They are very different. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and tell you that based upon the two sources of information, I'm going to choose to trust Yahweh, which means that I cannot trust you.
And then you get damned to hell, right?
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, the most recent one here was, I said, listen, let's just be frank about this. Because this person was going on and on about how God talks to them and how God talks to lots of Christians. And that just because you don't know his name doesn't mean that he's not hearing you. And so what I said is, listen, I have lots of wonderful conversations with Yahweh. They take place every single day. And every time that I read and think about and study his testimony, he speaks to me. And, yeah, I'm going to tell you that our conversations are one-sided in two ways. He does almost all of the talking because I read his testimony. And I get about all of the benefit. So, in this situation where he has encouraged us over and over and over again to listen to what he has to say and to read what he has written, when I do that, I have these wonderful conversations with him, and I am the beneficiary. And I have found that God has got a lot more important things to say than I do. I'll mumble something like, that's really cool. I like that. That's great. I'm glad to have learned that because now that reinforces something else or it explains something else. I'll mumble something like that from time to time.
It's going to be pretty hard for you to get through to people who are literally going to stand, according to the writings there in Matanyahu, they're going to stand in front of Yahweh and they're going to tell him he did all these great things for them and that they prophesied in his name and performed many mighty miracles in his name while they call him Lord and disrespect his name, of course.
Yeah.
And then he says, you got to depart from me, those of you that brought about opposition
I don't know you,
because I never even knew you. And, of course, it would be hard not to know somebody if you were around them, say, 40, 50, 60 years.
Particularly if they're babbling to you all the time. And I quoted that to her. I said, read the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, and you'll understand why I'm making these claims. And, one of the things that I learned in fact, I think I knew this before I started, which may have been the reason that I'm in this place now, is that I recognize that if you compare what I have to say to what Yahweh has to say, that he has a lot more valuable, interesting, useful things to say than I do. And since when I compare what I have to say to what he has to say, I recognize I'm probably a whole lot better off listening to him than he is listening to me. So that's how we spend our time, and it works out great. I'm really happy with that arrangement.
Yeah,
I can't imagine being arrogant enough to want to change it.
That would be called communication, what they're calling prayer, I suppose. Well, I mean, that's what you're doing. You're talking with Yahweh. He's talking to you. He calls those his words. So,
CB, as he does, Chuck's, as he does so wonderfully in the chat room, he, when I mentioned this idea of public revelation on this one, he cited the statement from Yahusha, which I think he was responding to the statement that you made, where Yahusha discourages public prayer, but it's more than just that he discourages public prayer. He actually tells us two things that Christians never seem to understand. He never asks us to pray to him. He asks us, and it says, if you want to talk to the Father, go ahead. Go in private and talk to the Father. The Son is not the Father. The second thing about it that's interesting is he says the same thing there that he says in the Instruction on the Mount. I always want to say Sermon on the Mount because that's what people, we all understand. Matanyah 5, 6, and 7 is the Sermon on the Mount, but my good friend Jack constantly highlights when in any of my writings when I write Sermon on the Mount, because she will share with me the religious definition of sermon, and he obviously was not delivering a sermon. So,
anything that sounds religious is typically not
correct. Right, not true. It really is the Instruction on the Mount. I trip over that because that's not the common way to phrase it. But in the Instruction on the Mount, he begins his review of the Torah by talking about the wonderful gifts of the Father and how the Torah is the source of the wonderful gift from the Father. You know, he says the same thing that he does in his Instruction on Prayer. He says, you know, the Father already knows what you need. He already knows what you need. You don't need to tell him. And I've kind of taken that approach with Yahweh. He knows what I need, I really don't see a point in asking him.
I don't either.
I will when I'm in a situation, when I'm really stumped on a translation, for example. I'll see, I could use some help here.
You make an earnest request, kind of like Danielle did.
Yeah, I could use some help here. I'm having a tough time with this one. You know, I don't get it. I've been over it. I don't know how to phrase this so that it works. I could use some help here. And I've always received the help. I don't receive the help in the sense that I go into a meditative state where I sit there and see if I can be used as a bell, you know, that would clang. I'm active. I'm engaged. I look at it and fresh eyes, and you know, use the tools and oh, okay, well that works. All right, I get it. Thank you. All right, so we'll move on. But that's pretty much the request. You know, I know I have a flawed body. It's going to degrade. You know, if I've got an ache and pain and a gimp in the get along. Well, I got a gimp in the get along. You know, if it's important to resolve, you know, he'll resolve it. If it's not important to resolve, then why even bother?
Me, I often find myself asking Yahweh to let a football team win that I've placed money on.
Yeah, I do every time I buy a lottery ticket. I will, I'll say, you know, hey, I'll cut you a deal here. If these numbers win, I'll spin you off 10%.
Of course, you have nowhere to send it because there's no storehouse.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell him. I'll throw his 10% up in the air, and he can take whatever he wants. So
right, there you go.
That's how we
yeah,
how
it's
we
work. It's at the point of ridiculous because, you know, we're right back to, you know, is Yahweh involved in the minutia of
right.
everyday lives of people who don't listen to him, that he doesn't view as family. And as a matter of fact, even people he does, is he involved in the minutia of their lives, you know? Like if they lost their cell phone, did they pray
yeah.
and find it, or this type of
thing? Yeah,
nonsense.
And I'm not going to do that. I'm just not going to
yeah,
do that.
I would think not.
First, I just think it's, I think those, the little things in life that are personal like that are beneath the nature of the relationship and our purpose. I think it is absolutely appropriate to have conversations about engaging in what's important with Yahweh. I don't think it is. There's no issue in having
like
a conversation.
His words.
Yeah,
his words that he
his
wrote
words,
down.
His family, how to properly convey his family, his message, how to. You know, I spent a lot of time on Shattering Myths here recently, trying to convey. Something that came up in an email exchange that I had with Richard not too long ago, where he was trying to figure out how I got terms and conditions of the covenant from mitzvah, when the first definition of every lexicon is command. And, sure,
no free will. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So he's in. He's. I mean. Richard's a really good guy. I mean, Richard is serious about his relationship with Yahweh, and he's a really good guy, and he wanted to start translating. He says, you know, I'm stumped here. I look up mitzvah, and every the first definition is always command. How do you get terms and conditions? And then how do you extrapolate that to the terms and conditions of the relationship? And, you know, my answer is that I know the author of the Torah. I know the construct that he created, which is free will. And you can't have a command in free will.
In a free will situation. No, in fact, he openly states you have to come to him of your own volition.
Correct.
I mean, he openly states that.
Yeah, he
so
has
that's not
mood.
A command situation.
Right. Yeah,
and there is no love involved in a command situation. Or no
right.
true relationship, as an example. I could say, you know, Yada, I want to be your good friend. I want to eat dinner with you. And let's get together next Thursday at 7:30 over at Jay's. And I know you can afford to fly in here. And by the way, if you don't do it, I'm going to come over and burn your house down and murder your family and your dog. Okay, so let's have a good relationship based on this threat.
Well,
let's put it in a situation that
everybody has heard of that's more common.
Okay.
You're a PFC. You've enlisted in the U.S. Army, and you're over there in Afghanistan. And the colonel, he tells you to pick up your gun at 0700 and walk out that door and march to the neighboring village. And you say, you know, it's a little early for me. You know, I'm just not up
that ain't
going to
work out too well for you, I can tell you.
Yeah, and, you know, if you ask nicely and we can negotiate the time, then, you know, I might consider it. What's going to happen to the PFC who chooses not to be ready at 7 o'clock?
If he put it like that, he's going to the brig. You know, and everybody knows that. And that's not the way Yahweh
operates. Because
that's
a command issued as an order. God doesn't have any of those. He just doesn't have any of those. So what I'll do is I'll look up every root of the word. I'll look up the basis of the word. And I'll continue to search until I find definitions of the word that not only work in the context of each of these sentences, but that also are wholly consistent with Yahweh's nature, his teaching, and his covenant. And I will add to the translation everything that I find that works logically, rationally in the statement, and is wholly consistent with Yahweh and his covenant. And when I've reached that point, that's my translation. And so
well, yeah, because it's just like the old era. I mean, that's the best one to use, you know, that, you know, fear or respect. So
right.
when we see the beginning of all knowledge is the fear
right.
of the Lord, we
right.
know it really states, you know, the beginning of knowledge
right.
is the respect of Yahweh.
Right.
And so anytime we see fear thrown in there, we know it's nonsense because Yahweh said all fear of him is a man-made notion.
Correct. Correct. And so when you're dealing with Yare, it's a great example. Almost every lexicon will list fear, terror, afraid, traumatized as the first four or five definitions. And somewhere
afflicted, beaten down, raped.
Right.
Yeah.
And somewhere
yeah.
way
yeah.
down the list, you'll see revere and respect. And so I will translate it revere and respect because they are valid definitions of the word that work in the sentences that are consistent with Yahweh's nature and with his covenant. And so the bottom line here is that I am prejudiced in this regard. A scholar could eat me up for lunch and say, but you're claiming to use these tools. These tools say that's the primary definition. And I'm unwilling to use the primary definition a high
because
percentage
you've
of the
decided
time.
To but there's a reason, and this is a really
yeah,
good
there's reason. There's a reason.
Yeah, yeah, because you've decided to use your head instead of taking the low road, because what I've found, and what you've openly stated, is that scholars, religious scribes, will
right.
always take the low road. I mean, they'll always take the road of fear. They'll always
right.
take the road of submission.
Control.
They'll always
Orders,
take the road
control.
Of worship.
Right.
And even when it makes no sense. There was
they'll
one
also
with
take
most
the, they'll take the popular path, too.
Well, yeah, it's always
if,
the popular
if somebody,
path.
If a religious individual wanted the Torah to be a law and filled with commands, they will say it is command. In fact, they'll take the Hebrew word dabar, which
word.
Means word, and when Yahweh speaks of the 10 words, they will translate it the 10 commandments.
You can't do that.
but they do. And
it's
so
insane.
I guess my point is that I have come to the conclusion that the best way to translate Yahweh's testimony is to get to know who he is and what he's offering first, and then to choose the definitions of every word that consistently match who he is and what he's offering.
And to do that, you're going back to base root words and original meanings, aren't you?
You are.
I mean,
you are. Really. And but yeah. what you're recognizing is that the single most effective way to translate a message this important is to get to know the author of the message and come to understand what he's offering, and then make certain that everything that you are rendering based upon the words that he is presenting is consistent with that.
With what he's offering, yes.
And who
and
he is.
What his nature is. Yes.
And who he is.
And after all, isn't that what he's asking us to really do, seriously consider
yes.
him and his nature and what he's
yeah.
offering?
Now, I will
that's...
tell you that the most reassuring part of this is that once I started taking that approach and rendered everything consistently the same way based upon who Yahweh is, and what he's offering, particularly
let me guess,
when we cover
everything
Psalm
fell into place.
Like 119, I will find constant affirmations that those choices were the right choices, because they'll be put into sentences by Yahweh where terms and conditions of the covenant is the only possible rendering of mitzvah, for example, where he will speak of the mishpat, which are the means to resolve disputes, in conjunction with sadak, which is vindication, which means that translating it as the means to resolve disputes has to be right because it's being presented in the context of it leading to sadak vindication. So I just find that once you come to know who Yahweh is and what he's offering, that you will constantly find affirmation that those renderings are accurate.
Yeah, it all falls into place. I understand that. There's one particular one, and I don't know where it's at. You had talked about it one day where Moshe was a little embarrassed, you know, and so what we find him doing, he was embarrassed about what the children of Yisrael were doing. So he looked at the ground, and in the religious rendering, it says, and he worshipped. Instead of he looked at the ground, he was embarrassed, you know.
Right. Yeah, and what's also interesting is that, and I must have found this 30 times, maybe more, maybe 50 times, but the most commonly translated Hebrew word for worship is chawa. Chawa, is the secondary definition of the word.
Yeah, to
and
make
so,
a declaration.
Right. The primary definition of the word is to make a declaration, is to make your response known. Audibilize, affirm, declare your response. And so when it's used in conjunction with something Yahweh has said, we're responding and say, yeah, I'm good with that. Okay. If that's what you want, that sounds cool to me. I accept that. That's not worship. That's back to relationship. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like the concept of ana. You know, we've talked about it so many times that ana, and ana happens to be in one of the first passages we're going to look at here. Ana can be translated afflict. That's one of its definitions. Now it's down there towards the end of the definitional list. But there are literally thousands of passages where ana cannot be translated afflict. And in those passages, it has to be translated respond. And the difference between afflict and respond is, you know, it's night and day. And so how do you choose? You choose to render the words consistent with Yahweh's nature, which never changes, is extraordinarily
based on the circumstance.
And his nature is extraordinarily easy to understand. If you just go to Father of the Covenant, who is guiding his children because he wants to spend time with and benefit his children, once you get that, I want to tell you, it's no more complicated than that. It's just
that's a Bereth covenant, isn't it?
Yeah, family.
Based
right.
on Baeth, a little
yeah.
house.
Right, yeah the little house. Well, this happens to be a really big house, but nonetheless, it is a house.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Can you imagine
you know,
what this house is going to be like,
covenant.
By the way? Can you imagine what
no.
they... Yeah, I just... Yeah, God doesn't ever try to bribe us or entice us to engage in a relationship with him. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. He really doesn't tell us what heaven is like, what his house in heaven is going to... He told us what he's going to... the five things he's going to do for us as his children. But he never really... in fact, he doesn't even come close to telling us what heaven's going to be like. By the same notion, do you know that God never tells us what Sheol is going to be like?
No, not really. I mean, it sounds like a hell of a place to be in, though. You know,
but he doesn't tell us... because if he were to say, hey, that Sheol place, man, that is really nasty down there. That's really, really nasty.
Yeah, he doesn't operate on fear.
It's just not his style. That would be okay. Then people would choose the option, the other alternative, just to avoid the really nasty place. And
yeah,
so
which
he
is
talk
not
about
much
it.
Of a reason. Yeah,
right,
he
doesn't
really
talk
does.
About it. And on terms of heaven, if just being there with Yahweh isn't good enough for you, then you ought not go.
Well, we know one thing. We know Yahweh's light, and it's the absence of Yahweh. And we know Sheol must be, you know, in total darkness. You can't see anything.
Well, you can come to conclusions that are undeniable and that are clear about the differences in the place.
I come to the conclusion that your consciousness is sitting out there and you can't feel, but it's right. you're just there. And that you would drive yourself crazy within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And within an eternity
Right. You know what the pictures are, the people on the, it's called the Vomit Comet, airplane that goes up and down to prepare you for space travel?
No, I've never seen it.
You can watch pictures, and the people that your stomach is always in a sense of upheaval because there's you're weightless for a significant amount of the time, and you know I have a sense that the experience would be nauseating like that, disorienting, nauseating. I mean, there's a lot of clues, but he just doesn't come out and tell us because there's no reason for him to tell us. There's plenty of clues that we can ascertain the nature of the place on our own. As we start in 1975.
Yeah, and of course we can't get on ITG tonight, so we're
no, we can't. And so that you know, Yoel is doing his best to try to get it back up.
I've been cussing that guy for 2 days.
Yeah, it began with the attacks on Prophet of Doom. We're on Rackspace with all of the sites, and when the denial of service attacks brought down Prophet of Doom, and they permeated to all of the other sites and the forum, and it's extraordinarily expensive for Rackspace to have to cough up the bandwidth for the denial of service attacks. The solution in terms of software is really expensive. We moved Questioning Paul to an entirely different host where it is now, and it's been very stable since it's been there. But Prophet of Doom is a very complicated site, and it was written 10 years ago, and the software right now is very dated. And to go back in and rewrite all the software so it'll work on a different server is a lot of work. And then there's also the issue of we're on really old versions of the forum software, and there's the chance we could lose a lot of the history if we update it to the newer versions of that forum software. And so it's not an easy fix, particularly because of the attacks that Muslims have made against Prophet of Doom. So right now, everything but Questioning Paul is down.
Well, you've angered somebody. Okay.
Yes,
well, that's a good thing, probably.
That's a good thing. We got their attention. All right. This begins verse 75. Yada Yawa. That's a pretty good name for a book, don't you think?
Yeah, it's pretty
good. Yeah, it's... It's Yada Yawa. I actually know Yawa. I am completely aware of who Yawa actually is. I recognize him because I am familiar with him. I have discovered Yawa. And as a result, I have come to genuinely respect him. I acknowledge Yawa based upon what he has revealed and offered. I understand Yawa and completely agree with him. Yawa and I are actually friends. This was Yada Yawa in the call perfect first person singular. That's the beginning of 1975. Yada Yawa.
Be dealing with the Yod here. Is that right? Or
pardon?
Are we dealing with the Yod on this particular
stanza? This particular series? Oh yes, the Yod. Yes, it's the hand.
That would make sense. Okay.
Yeah, it would.
I'm not looking at it. I'm just taking a stab here. Okay.
Yeah. In fact, the first statement under the Yod was, "Your hands have accomplished your hands." Yod.
It's the Yod again.
Yeah, that's not just the Yod. That is the Yod.
Yeah,
there's a difference between the Y as in the letter and the name for the letter, which is Yod, which means hand. So,
it's a matter of both right there.
You know,
okay.
when I was starting the translation of the 119th Psalm, in every English Bible translation and every interlinear, there's no mention of the fact that this is 22 refrains of 8 verses, one for each letter, and that it comes off in alphabetical order. And I have no idea how it dawned on me that, you know, that this was an alphabetical presentation through the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet in the right order of the letters. But, you know, when you come to the Yod and you have the first word be Yod, you know, after a while you say, okay, this pattern is really hard to deny. So, yes, your hands have accomplished the work required to conceive and create me. Ashah is that Hebrew word that can be translated to do, but it very seldom can be translated to do without rendering the conversation somewhat moronic. There's most of the time I render it act upon or engage in, Ashah. But in this particular statement, I think it is it's better to render it conceive and create. So, your hands have accomplished the work required to conceive and create me. And also, they have formed and fashioned me to be firmly established and appropriately directed. Kum. Kum is the K version of kum, as in stand. So
as in kumbaya.
Yeah, fashion me so that I can stand upright. You know, have a fashion me so that I can, you know, that I've got a backbone. Fashion me so that I've got hands with fingers and an opposable thumb so I can write. I can hold things so I can read it. You know, fashion me with a with the ability to stand upright, the only animal that walks naturally upright. So your hands have accomplished the work necessary to conceive and create me, and also have formed me and established me upright. Now, that is what he's doing here, by the way, is explaining Yahweh's name. What he's doing here is explaining Yahweh's purpose. Us being upright is a really, really big deal. Because when you're upright and you're walking side by side with someone, you're not bound down to them. When you're doing that, if somebody conceived you to be upright and standing next to them, they're
then
not looking
an enemy might want you bowing down in opposition to that uprightness. Maybe.
Yes. Yeah. This is a God creating a companion that has the capacity to walk side by side, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm. Well, that's an extraordinary situation. That's saying that God wants to establish, he created us in such a way that we can be just like him.
That's a totally amazing situation.
Most
people think, you know, obviously the exact opposite.
Right. You know, it's kind of like a really, really loving dad wants their children to be better than they are. You know, a really loving dad doesn't want their children to be almost as good as they are. They want their children to be better.
You know, I want to, can I throw something in here? It's, you know, Malachi, he wrote this. He said, he says, so this miswas for you, you old clerics, if you don't listen and place it on your heart and give glory to my name, says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment,
right,
I'll send out in among you all a curse. I'll curse you with kneeling down. I mean, that's the signature mark of religion. Kneeling down, you know.
Yeah, but it's perfect.
Yeah, sure it is.
It's absolutely perfect. Since our loving Father can't make us better, bigger than he is, what he can do is make us equivalent to him. And that's what he is communicating here. Now that's, as they say in the South, that's tall cotton.
That's huge. Yeah.
It, and when you understand that God is Father and that we are His children, this idea of being made equivalent to God, by God, is not blasphemy. You know,
no, I'm sure that's his hope. I don't know that any of us will ever make that, but I mean, you know, his hope is to make us great. I mean,
yeah.
You know, as great as we can possibly be. I mean, that's a fact. Sure.
That's right. And we, you know, there's lots of passages, like the passages in Daniel, talk about his set apart one. We not only inherit the kingdom, we become royalty. We become royalty. Yeah, it's a big deal. That's, you know, when, if you're the son of the king, that's a big deal in the kingdom, but this kingdom just happens to be the universe, and this king just happens to be God. So it's the right family to be part of. So please help me develop the mental acuity to be observant and understand. Bien. You know, we talked so many times. There's lots of things in the Torah that we cannot do. There is nothing in the Torah that we can't benefit from understanding. And Dode is saying that the very means for us to be exactly like Yahweh, for Yahweh to establish us upright side by side with Him, the means to accomplish that is for us to grow in understanding. The more we come to understand, the closer we become to Yahweh. That is the key to the whole thing. That's why He wants us to listen to Him. That's why He wants us to closely examine and carefully consider what He has to say. If I go on and I blabber on for hours to God, or if I blabber in tongues, how is that going to help me understand?
It won't.
It won't.
It's like, you know, I'm in professional sales. I know you've been in professional mm-hmm. sales, and I can tell you, in professional sales, whether it's on the phone as I do now, or it used to be face to face, I got to the point where I could read people within seconds. I was listening
I
was talking.
Me too. Uh-huh.
If you can't listen while you're talking, you can't effectively sell. I mean, you talk to people, 60% of it's listening. 60%.
Oh yeah.
You know, you know, when you're in a situation where you hear somebody say, "Well, this guy can talk. He can talk a Eskimo into buying ice," I think that's the last guy I'm going to hire, you know,
right.
Because it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You know, and
I sold for a living too, and what I realized is that the best way to sell is not to sell. The best way to sell is, rather than talk, is to ask the person that you wish to do business with questions. And then when you find out what they need, what they want, what their business is all about, how it works, then you offer them what it is that they have requested. It's not hard. Then they will choose to buy what you have offered because it's what they have expressed that they want.
And how did you figure that out? You listened. You know.
You asked them questions. My first three or four sales meetings, with a new client, I would always spend the time saying, "I'm not here to sell you anything. I want to come to understand you and your business so that when we have a presentation together on product and a plan, that product and plan is tailored in every possible way to exceed your expectations and to meet your business's needs." So I can't do that unless I know who you are and what you want. And you know what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And so it's just... You know, when it comes to doing business with a customer, the customer, I figured out, knew more about their business than I did. When it comes to participating in Yahweh's covenant, I have a hunch. It's a big stretch here. I have a hunch he knows more about participating in his covenant than I do. So, listen to it.
I'd say that that's a safe bet.
It's a pretty safe bet, right?
Yeah, and to make all the connections, to understand that there's this non-religious path. It has nothing at all to do with religion.
Yep.
And you're walking down this path that Yahweh blazed, and you're not earning it. There's nothing you can possibly do to earn it.
Right.
Then you're getting there.
Yeah.
You're really getting there. And especially,
I would go as far, Larry, as to say that of the 7 billion people on the planet today,
mm-hmm.
that there aren't 70 people on the planet today that know Yahweh and understand what he's offering better than I do. I'd say I'm probably
you're probably right. I'd say you're probably right.
You know something? There. Still, by comparison to what he knows about the covenant and what he's offering and who he is,
you know nothing.
I'm not even navel-lent.
I know. I know all that.
Yeah.
You'll be the first to admit it, though, too. You know,
and
I'm getting in there. I'm in the top few hundred, I think. But I have to tell you that the beauty of what I know is that it really doesn't depend on my beautiful behavior, my wonderful heart, my great intentions. It has nothing to do with that. It's got something to do with the fact that I actually like Yahweh. I do.
Yeah.
And I like that path. And I like, I'm a rebel at heart. I'm big a rebel as you'll ever meet.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate authority. I despise it.
I'm telling you that, that's my freedom. I love the freedom.
Yeah.
It just really, really, the 119th woke me up. The freedom of the Torah. It's an unbelievable freedom.
And the bottom line to the whole thing is that once you come to know Yahweh and understand what he's offering, at that point you just relax. Because you know, wow, this is really wonderful.
Just along for the
ride.
Like
him. You know, I like him. And there's a difference between love, and sometimes we talk about love and it's cushy and not real. And so I don't think there's any problem with the word like. I like what he has to say. I like the way he says it. I like what he's offering. And this like just happens to be the extreme end of like. But, you know, like is the stuff of love.
I mean, look, I could say I love Yahweh. I happen to enjoy calling him Yahweh instead of Father. I happen to say I like him, and you know, I mean, that's just the way I present it. When I say I like somebody, hey, that's a giant compliment, because I don't say it to a dozen people in my life.
What, you know, there's a difference between like and love in the sense that that love is usually almost all emotion. Like means I know who that person is. I know how that person does business. I know what that person is like to be around. I like being around them. Like this, I just like them. I think that like is a marvelous term in this regard. So anyway, Dode is saying here, please help me develop the mental acuity to be observant and understand. Now, that's a little bit humbling for me because of the fact that I've only got one capability that's better than par, and that is the ability to make connections to go from knowing to understanding. And Dode is the epitome of understanding. He is the not just smartest man in human history. I think he understands Yahweh and what he is offering more than anyone who has ever walked this planet. And so here is my hero, my idol in terms of understanding. And so the guy that I think has really got it locked, I mean, he is where I would love to be, and yet he's asking God, you know, I would really appreciate if you helped me understand. Now, that also tells you that David's attitude towards God never changed. that
no,
they're smarter.
No, it's a constant learning experience.
Right.
Because, and it is. I mean, it is. I mean, there's things. 2 years ago, you were blowing me away with the things you were coming up with. You know, and today, the things, they're off the map. I mean, really, in comparison.
But it is, it remains exactly as Doe's position here is.
Yeah.
I love learning. I recognize that I am the learner. You are the teacher. Let's keep that that learning opportunity going. You know, I don't want to ever get complacent. Say, okay, I got it now. No, the fun is in the learning. The more we learn, the more we're like Yahweh. And then I really want you to teach me how to respond properly. What's the purpose of understanding? So we can respond.
So you can respond. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
What is a relationship about? Responding. When you were talked about the professional sales situation, you asked the customer questions, you learned what they wanted. It puts you in a position to respond.
No, that's what you did. I was just kind of a slow-talking, mohaired Joe type. No.
Funny.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So, and then what does he want to respond properly to? Your commandments, right?
But to his invitations.
No, to his command. I mitzvah here. It must mean commandments. That I really want you to teach me your commandments.
Yeah, teach me. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, when Yahweh at the second of the three statements on the first of the two tablets, he said, Shamar Mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
Shamar Mitzvah. Observe the terms and conditions.
Yeah.
Observe the, no, it's not Shema Mitzvah, it's Shamar Mitzvah. Observe the terms and conditions. Adod is saying here, I really want you to teach me how to properly respond to the mitzvah, the terms and conditions. Because for everyone listening here, I think everybody's heard this before, but in all of the universe, of all of the Torah, of all of the words that have ever been spoken, of everything that's ever been done, there is nothing more important than you understanding the terms and conditions of the covenant, that, and you responding to them.
That you is, choke.
That is, yeah. Yeah, or mitzvah. You know, the choker inscribed prescriptions that cut you into the relationship. The mitzvah, the terms and conditions of the covenant. There is nothing more important than that. If you understand what the terms and conditions are of the covenant, there's five of them, and you respond to them, Yahweh will take care of everything else. At that point, you are in his hands. You become his child, his responsibility. The rest of it is up to him. Now, that doesn't mean you just sit there like a bump on a log and croak every once in a while. Because what you find is that once you come to understand and you respond to the terms and conditions of the covenant and you're part of the family, if you're not excited beyond anything you've ever experienced in your life, if you don't want to make the relationship everything that it can be, if you don't want to grow and learn to the greatest extent possible and then share with everybody what you have discovered, then you're really not there.
Well, you know, the type of people that are going to be involved in this are trumpets. They are,
yeah,
sharing.
Absolutely.
You know,
have you met anyone? I mean, I haven't. I've received thousands upon thousands of letters. I have not yet met a single person who has embraced the terms and conditions of the covenant, come to know Yahweh through his
and
Torah.
And didn't try to share it. Usually with relatives who shot them down.
Immediately. Everyone's response is identical.
They go to their relatives and then they get shot down. Depressed.
Right. Our response is always the same. First of all, just utter appreciation and joy for being here and having all the burdens lifted off and being in Yahweh's company and knowing that God has done all this wonderful things for us. That's the first reaction, is just release of responsibility, utter joy, happiness to be here. And the second is, how do I share this? This is so wonderful. And when I try to share it with my friends and family, they cling to religion.
Yeah.
We all have exactly the same thing. And very quickly, what I found is that those whose eyes are open, they have this enormous thirst to learn more. There's a, she may be listening tonight, I don't know, but there's a Jewish woman. She's, I think she has a young son, so I don't think she's probably, you know, half my age, be my guess. And she has come out of, you know, agnostic, being a Jew, but being agnostic. Then she was drawn into, because she said, I really do think there's a God. Just because my parents were agnostic, I think there really is a God. I'd sure like to get to know him. And she listened to some Christian sermons and said, whoa, boy, that's not God. that doesn't make any sense. Then she tried
a little
Hebrew
more
roots
educated than that,
and the Messianic movement says, oh, no, that's way too many contradictions.
We got one foot in Paul, the other on the rabbis. Yeah,
right. She couldn't do that either. And then somehow she finds what we've written and what we've shared and the show and that sort of thing. And it's just, oh, my, this is the God that I always expected. This is exactly what I expected. This makes sense. And the reason I'm sharing this is that her thirst now is to study. She wants to learn how to translate and to go off and study. She says, you know, it's fun reading the books that you've written, and I'd read something, and the first thing I would do is to verify whether or not that was true. And, you know, every time I checked, I'd find out, yeah, that really is true. It's just that it's so different than what everybody else says, but, boy, it makes sense. And now she wants to go off and translate. And so,
well, you know, learning cycles, you know, they have ups and downs. You know that. I mean, that's with anything. You know, it's not just a straight line up. It's a, you know, you'll stagnate and then up and stagnate and up and stagnate and up. And when I get in these up modes and I start, you know, just kind of free writing some stuff and throwing it out there and putting a couple of notes on, by and large, 2, 3, 4 people will friend me in a day. And one or two of them will be all in my inbox asking for more information. Okay.
Right.
And you know, that always rates a phone call, by the way. So I call them and just start kind of going through it and sharing the notes that, you know, kind of break things down in a fundamental way, because, you know, it's like anything, you know, being an expert or a black belt, you know, you're being an expert at the fundamentals.
Right.
And so we get those fundamentals out there. And, you know, I get people saying, man, I just can't get enough. And this happens all the time. I mean, it happens constantly, you know. So right now I can't send them to the site, so I'm sending them over to Richard's, you know, Bless Yahweh site's what I'm doing, which is beautiful because he's got it broken down in a way for beginners to get
perfect
in there.
And there's also one that is, I think, is also really good. It's yhwh-qra.com. So yhwh-qra.com. It's also got all of the books, but it also has links to other translations, just to be helpful, and it also has the books all in an audio form.
Oh, really?
Y-H-W-H-Q-R-A.com. Yahweh's name, the four letters that comprise Yahweh's name, -Q-R-A.
-Q-R-A?
Q-R-A, for Kara.
Oh,
so, you know, Kara, to read, to recite, to invite, you know. So it's Yahweh.
Who's running this site? I did not know this.
Yeah, it's Don. Don is the former Marine. Don's really good friends with Frank and Diane up there in Washington, Oregon. I've communicated with Don now for years. Don, I didn't even know was on the line last week, but got in a kind of a comment towards the end about Don is really loves the whole concept of the Nisalma and how it helps us think. But Don's a former, not just a former Christian, he was really active in the Seventh-day Adventist movement. And so Don has built this site that now has people around the world visiting it, and it's called YHWH-QRA.com. And first of all, when you're there, if there's a contact us and you have a chance to engage in discussion with Don, he is a very funny man. Now, when I talk about my faults, for example, you know, Don will say, you know, I've got faults that are older than you. You know, Don is really a funny man. So you'll, he's a man's man. I mean, former Marine, tough as nails, and yet a heart of gold. So, YHWH-QRA.com is his site.
Fred just posted that on my page. I'm seeing it now.
Yeah, go visit it, and it's got, he's got all the books. The toughest book for him by far was Questioning Paul, because when he had to reject Paul, and he got really mad at me for a long time, and he wouldn't even talk to me when I wrote Questioning Paul, because it isolated him from his children. And, you know, now he is a huge proponent of eliminating Paul from our vocabulary. But, you know, he's a real guy. You'd enjoy it. You know, just as Richard, I mean, for those who are listening who visit Richard's site, you can communicate with him, and he's fun to talk to. Richard's a good guy, and he's no nonsense, which, you know, I like. In fact, recently, because Richard's has had several people that have written him and given him a hard time. Typically, they give him a hard time on my book, so it's, you know, it's poor guy is catching heat from me for what I've written. But just to show him that he's not alone, I've been CCing Richard on a bunch of my emails recently, so that he gets an appreciation for.
You mean all the maniacs out there? Yeah.
A lot of them are good, though. You know, you try the best you can. So anyway, the first opening line is, "Your hands have accomplished the work required to conceive and create me, and also they have formed and fashioned me to be upright and to be established. So please help me develop the mental acuity to be observant and to understand. And then I really want you to teach me how to respond properly to the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement." If you were to just summarize what we ought to be focusing on, that's it. Understand the terms and conditions of the covenant and then respond to them. We were made for that. That's what we were conceived for. Then this goes on to one of your favorite words, Larry. Those who fear you, those who are terrified, those who respect and revere you, they shall see me, and they will be delighted and even elated indeed upon the certainty of your word. I have placed my expectation. I like Dode's in-your-face attitude. Dode knows that he gets it. He knows that Yahweh loves him. He knows that he has responded properly to the terms and conditions of the covenant. He knows he's going to heaven. And he knows that Yahweh is using him to convey his message to the rest of us. You know, it's a big difference between, Larry, what you and I are doing and what Dode did. We're sharing what Dode shared. That's a cool spot to be in. I love that spot. But
yeah,
it's a big difference when Yahweh is inspiring you to write his words. That's the spot Dode was in. And toad is saying here as an implement that John was using to write his testimony to the world. That, you know, you all, that all of you who revere Yahweh, you're looking forward to seeing me. I am. I mean, I am really looking forward to meeting Dode. You know, he's of the humans in heaven, he's one of the very first people I'm going to look up. You know, after I have met with up with my son, he's one of the very first people. Larry, I love you, but I really do. I want to meet Dode. I more than anybody.
You got to be kidding. And
yeah,
in front
I know.
Of me? Are you?
Yeah.
Wow, that is outrageous.
It's true.
Okay.
It's
you
true.
Mocked me.
Yeah, I am. I am going along with this.
I've
I really
been
want to meet
before.
Them. I mean, I just think that to meet an implement like this, you know, I admire the job that Moshe did. That was a tough job. But Moshe doesn't inspire me. The words that Yahweh dictated through Moshe absolutely inspire me, don't get me wrong. But Moshe, just as a character, I do want to meet him. I want to, and I want to know, you know, kind of what it was it like to be in Egypt, and what was it like to be herding these cats through the desert, and share this experience. You know, what was it like to first meet Yahweh, and you know the top of the mountain's ablaze, and you say, you know, I'm really not sure I want to go. You know, sure, it'd be interesting, but can you imagine talking with Dode?
It would be amazing.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
I
it'd be absolutely amazing. I mean,
I think it'd be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just don't run into Renaissance men every day. I mean,
no.
That haven't beat on every angle. You just
yes.
don't. I mean,
yes. He is the Einstein and Isaac Newton of Yahweh's word. He gets it, and that's why Yah loves him. And so he goes on to say, "So I'm going to be there because upon the certainty of your word, I have placed my expectation." At the time that Dode wrote this, what was the sum total of Yahweh's word?
The Torah.
That would be it, wouldn't it? So his expectation of heaven and Yahweh called the man righteous was based on the Torah. Good enough for me. And then he says, Yada Yahweh. I actually know Yahweh. You know, once you know Yahweh, the rest falls into place.
Well, you know what? Even then, he was surrounded by religiousness or nothingness.
Sure. Sure.
And so he was in no different shape than we're in, except
right.
he had less tools to work with.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
And so now he had a lot better understanding of Paleo Hebrew than probably anyone else,
right.
but you know anybody we know. But it doesn't really matter. He didn't have a lot of tools, and he came to know Yahweh for who Yahweh was, as opposed to some religious deity. And man, this guy was celebrating that all the way down the path, and he was glad that
right.
it didn't have anything to do with his personal heart or feelings or whatever, you know. I mean, I'm not going to say actions because some actions are, you know, do count. But you know, for the most part, the things that we've been taught, you know, well, he led a good life and he was kind to others, and you know, go right through the litany.
But you know, Dode, Richards got it nailed. Dode was a tool. Dode was an implement.
Well, yeah.
And that's a really cool job. And by the way, somebody else wrote, you know, they're really looking forward to meeting Yahweh. If I miscommunicated, the first individual that I want to meet in heaven and to actually see with my my own perceptions is the glory of Yahweh. And I did
that. Well, you're not going to stand out in the background when you...
No.
He's just welcomed you into
the
family, man.
No, I've already told you my ideal initial experiences in heaven are to first walk up to Yahweh and give him a big hug, you know, just as you would a dad and a best friend. That's the first thing. It's just kind of that hug where you let all your air out to say, Oh, man, am I ever glad to be here. Am I ever glad to be with you. And then I want to step back, and I just want to kind of, you know, my own world here. I want to sit back in the back of the room, and then I want to watch other people have that same experience the first time that they get to see him. I just want to soak in that environment and to watch the expressions on his face and other people's faces as they get to enjoy the same thing. And it's the unique part of the covenant where rather than us inheriting uniquely all that Yahweh has to give and us being individually rich, we are made richer the more children there are in the covenant. The more brothers and sisters we have in the covenant, the richer our experience is going to be. So rather than saying, you know, boy, I'm glad that I'm one of the thousand that are here, it's going to be even a richer experience if we're one of 7,000 or 70,000. The more that are there, the richer our experience is going to be. So many individuals to experience. Anyway, yada yada. Indeed, your means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes are fair, vindicating, righteous, and upright. Remember I told you that I like it when you study a word and you say, all right, well, you know, the most rational definition, the most rational translation for mitzvah is the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. And then you read it in here and it says, I know Yahweh, and indeed, truly and surely, your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes are fair, vindicating, righteous, right, honest, and in complete accord with the standard. Now you tell me how it is possible that mitzvot is not translated correctly when it is followed by tzedak. At that point you just say, all right, I rest my case. I've told you up front that I translated mitzvot from the heart, from my love of Yahweh, the fact that I like who he is and the way he communicates, and I understand and am passionate about his covenant. So I told you that I translated mitzvot based upon that appreciation. And then you see it here defined, where there is no other way to define it.
Yeah, do it one more time. Just do it one more time.
Okay. So, with mitzvot, if you read it in a lexicon, you're going to see mitzvot as the judgment.
Yeah.
Judgment
judge. Okay.
Judgment or judge. So your judgments are fair and vindicated and righteous.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's talking about here in context is this absolute certainty that he's going to end up in heaven, that he has taken the time to not only come to understand, but he has responded properly to the terms and conditions of the covenant, and that he, in relying on Yahweh's word, is certain that he's going to be in heaven, and that we're going to have a good time when we meet. And then he says, I know Yahweh, indeed, your means to resolve disputes are vindicating. They're righteous. And so when you see it written that way, you realize that if you rendered it judgment or judge, that now it doesn't make any sense. And again, it's Yahweh telling us the terms and conditions of his covenant. Yahweh telling us what he's like. Yahweh providing the information for us to understand and respond. You know, the fact that God would have the capacity to exercise good judgment doesn't need to be said.
Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer.
There's no benefit in Dode revealing that God's got good judgment.
Well, the only benefit, of course, in religious material in doing that is because he's lording over you, he's judging you, you're being judged.
But there is no reason to say that. And by the way, Dode wouldn't know it. Dode's never seen him adjudicate a case. Ever. So when you render it that way, you've come up with something that has no value. You can't learn from it. You can't benefit from it. It doesn't help you, and there's no way to verify it. And it's obvious. But if you render it as your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, are vindicating, are upright, are liberating, are righteous, are right, are honest. Now you've got something. Because then you look at what are Yahweh's means to resolve disputes. Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, Sukkah. On behalf of the covenant's children. Now, those are righteous. And they're just because God's able to overlook our guilt because he paid the price. He ransomed us. So they're just. They resolve the disputes, and they do so justly. That's when you render the word correctly, what you see is the most ingenious and honorable solution to the problem that exists of us having free will. Us having free will is cool, but it also means that we can do dumb stuff. And so God has to have a means to resolve the fact that we do dumb stuff. And can you imagine a better way to do it than for God himself to say, you know, for me to be just, someone has to pay the price. Someone has to be willing to collectively bear the guilt associated with all the dumb stuff.
Take the strokes, do the family.
Exactly. And he chose to take it himself. And so he created this path to him where he said, I'm going to pay this toll. I am myself going to make this possible for you to walk to me and be absolutely perfect and immortal, because everything that you've ever done wrong, I had associated with me, and I already paid the price. Now, that's an extraordinary plan. Now, you were talking about you like Yahweh. Well, I like that plan. That plan,
yeah, no,
that he
I do
says,
too. I mean,
says,
everybody
wow.
talks about being just. I mean, it is just.
Yes.
You know, it's if somebody listens to you, and they do what you ask them to do, okay? And the other people just say to hell with you. You know, I had a face-to-face last night with four people, face-to-face. And, you know, I was just explaining some of the corruptions in the book named after the sun goddess Biblia, and one of them said, what if you're wrong? I said, well, if I'm wrong, then Yahweh, the creator of the universe, is wrong, and this conversation doesn't matter anyway.
Right.
You know. Yeah, it's as simple as that. I said, but until one of you take the time for 10 years to sit down and look at these things,
right.
I don't think you're in any position to know.
Right. And, you know, the my answer to that, because I get asked that all the time, what if you're wrong? And my answer is, I can't be wrong. It's impossibly wrong. How do I know that I'm not wrong? Because what I'm saying is what Yahweh said. And he proved that he's right. Through prophecy, through just brilliant oratory, he proved that he's right. And once he proved that he's right, then there is no way, when we rely on what he said, that we can be wrong. That, by the way, is Dode's conclusion. I mean, that's why I like Dode. He's in God's face. He's saying to God, you couldn't keep me out of heaven if you wanted to. Because you're trustworthy. What you promised to do, you're going to do. And because you're trustworthy, I'm coming to heaven. And he says, you know, those of you who love Yahweh, you're going to find me there. Because you're going to be there too. He's right in God's face. He's so much saying, God, I dare you. I mean, there's no way you can keep me out of heaven, because you, what you said is trustworthy, and I've chosen to rely on it. So, Larry, it's impossible to be wrong.
Yeah.
Can't be wrong.
Well, yeah. I mean, if Christianity were correct, and that's what these four were.
Right.
And one of them even told me, there's a lot of good things that come out of religion. I said, yeah, you know, like wars, theft, you know, lies,
right.
People misleading others.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there, but I'm hearing myself now.
Yeah, I clicked on a line to try to bring them in, and I should not have done it. I apologize.
Oh, you're okay.
Anyway,
well,
you're
I'll
right.
stop right there, but it was outrageous, really. I mean,
no, you're right. That's and many people say that, you know, religion has created the ability for people to be civilized and to be moral. I said, no, you want to look at the history of the world's largest religion, and what you're going to see is a river of blood.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're vicious. God hates them. So, indeed, your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes are fair, vindicated, and righteous. And firmly, reliable, and steadily, you have responded to my call and have answered all of my questions with your witness, Anah. That's the, the challenge I got into this woman today that kept on saying that, you know, that God needs to talk to her privately. And, you know, my response is no. Every question, that the answer to every question that's important is already in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. There is no question that isn't answered there, that has any relevance to our situation and opportunity to have a relationship with God. Every answer is there. And to assume that God did not give us a complete answer and that he needs to pick, you know, Mary Sue to complete the testimony because, you know, he was not comprehensive enough. He just wasn't able to get it all done. It's kind of like the Paul idea, that God really wasn't able to articulate his plan, and his plan didn't work. So
he went and hired a rabbi.
He went
and
hired a murderer, demon-possessed, insane murderer, to fix his problems and come up with a new plan.
Yeah, well, I can think of a couple of people he did that with, according to them. Muhammad would be another one.
I tell you what, I'm not buying it. I am in exactly the same position that Dode's in, just not as smart, and that I have found that every time that I had a question, that God provided the answer. And if I wanted the answer, I did not sit there on my duff contemplating the molecular weight of navel length. I went to his testimony. I went to his word. Please, Nah, I want your ongoing mercy and your continuous love to always be comforting and consoling me in accordance with your word and the promises you have made to your associate. God is always consistently merciful, loving, consoling to his children, to those who engage with him. And the means to which he is merciful is presented in his testimony. You study his word, listen to what he has to say, respond to the terms and conditions of the covenant. God's going to love you like a father. That does not mean he loves everybody. His love is unlimited, but it's only directed at his children.
Yeah, but and as a father... you know, you don't love everybody like you love your kids. That's actually impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible. No. Yeah. In fact, I would dare say that most parents love their children even more than they love their spouses.
Maybe.
There's something about your children. I love my wife. And yes, you know, if there was a car heading down the middle of the street, and I could save my wife, but it would take my life, I would do it. If that same situation was with one of my two sons, I would go as far as to say, even if it would leave me absolutely paralyzed and the pain would be excruciating, I wouldn't even hesitate.
Well, I don't think most men with wives or kids would be any different. Most. I mean, I would hope not. So, you know.
Yes. But, you know, and the distinction is kind of silly, too, because you don't have your children without your wife, and you can't have really a happy family without the marriage being happy.
It's hard for me to say I love more than one than another. I either love them or don't. I think love is in a different way for everybody.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've got four kids, and I love them all, but I love them all differently. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what...
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the point is that Yahweh's love for his children is infinite.
Yeah,
always there. Love for his children is, and you know if. Oh, let me give you another example. hypothetical. Didn't happen. My wife decides she's going to do something really stupid, and not only cheats on me, but gets really strung out on drugs, and she becomes a common. Criminal to support her habit.
Sounds a lot like Mrs. Yada. Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
yeah.
My wife is the antithesis of that, so I can actually say that as hypothetical. Okay, but that's what
it's obviously
she does.
Is what I'm saying.
You know, she's my wife.
Ahead.
I'm going to do everything I can to help her through this.
Yeah.
But my response, if it was one of my sons, would be different than that. With my sons, that. The love would be absolutely unquenchable no matter what they did. And, you know, and at that point, I'm going to engage in some tough love. But, you know, our response to a wife that cheats on us and gets into terrible behavior is different than than it would be for our sons.
Well, that's true.
It's even more intense as it relates to our sons. And I think that's true, that what Yahweh is willing to do for us as his children is extraordinary.
Obviously. And,
yeah, obviously.
It, so,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. So please, I want your ongoing mercy and your continuous love to always be comforting and consoling me in accordance with your word and your promises that you have made to your associate. God has laid out the means to receive his love. If you want to receive his love, then respond to him in the way that he's articulated. He's told us who gets his love. In fact, what he said in the second of those 10 statements that he etched in stone was that those who observe the terms and conditions of the covenant are the recipients of my love and mercy. So what it tells you is when you become his child because you choose to engage in the covenant, then you're going to receive his love and mercy. That's how it happens.
Yeah, I mean, he says over and over, his mercy isn't for everyone. He says it's for thousands, in fact.
That's right.
I mean, doesn't
he quantifies it
to thousands, and he can count. You know,
I think his math skills are really good.
a big understatement there, obviously.
Yeah.
But
you know, but one of the things that so many people have a tough time with is that, well, you know, again, getting back to how do you know you're right? Because not only did God prove that he authored this testimony and that he's God, but he is a really good communicator. He's not hard to understand. He really isn't hard to understand. He's a really effective communicator. And to suggest that we just can't read his testimony and come to understand him would imply that God is not a very good communicator.
Also imply that we need religious clerics who are well studied to do this for us.
Yeah.
Something he said he hates, by the way.
Right.
So,
why, if God was capable of creating the universe and DNA, do you suspect that he would be incapable of communicating to the same creation that he conceived? What would be the purpose of creating us if God was incapable of communicating with us?
There'd be no purpose.
There'd be no purpose.
He
and so this assumption
would
that
not
you need
have put himself right. in a situation to take the strokes due the family. I mean, why bother? I can't communicate with them, right? I mean,
right. So I rather like the way he communicates. I find his communication style to be interesting because he's not into sound bites. While understanding him is easy, it takes an investment of time and a desire to know, because you do have to think your way through the process. He made it that way on purpose. What it does is it gets rid of all of the riffraff, all the people that say, you know, I want the, just give me what I need to say, and I'll be done with it, I'll go on with my life, and then we'll meet up again in heaven. It gets rid of all of that. It means that everybody we're going to encounter in heaven is going to have exactly the same passion for Yahweh, going to have the same passion for His Word, same passion for discovery and for learning. So the entire family is going to share the same passion, because you aren't going to come to know who He is unless you're passionate about it, unless it's a priority. But you don't have to be smart. You just have to want to. All right, come or choose to have your genuine, unfolding, and compassionate mercy, Rakhaim bow, and elect to really restore me, always keeping me alive. So Rakam, mercy. So this is, bow means to bring something, to arrive with something. So bring your mercy. And this was written in the Jusuf. Jusuf is, speaks of volition, choosing, wanting. And elect to restore me and always keep me alive. Chawa is the Hebrew word for restore life, nurture life, cause life to grow. Indeed, your Torah is my greatest joy. When the Torah is something that you like, then you're in the right place.
Yeah, but again, in order to really, really love the Torah, we have to understand it's about learning from it. It's a learning tool, and it takes all the pressure off of us. Yahweh doesn't say you have to have an IQ of 140, you know.
I took classes in school, Larry, that I didn't like very much. I took classes in school that I loved.
True.
Right.
Me too.
Okay.
Yeah.
If the Torah was laws to be obeyed, it would be impossible for there to be any joy in it. There are no joy in laws to be obeyed. So this statement that your Torah is my greatest joy negates the possibility that Torah could mean law, and that there is a concept of obedience.
Well,
but beyond
that, a million other things too.
Right.
But okay. Yeah.
Beyond that, for the Torah to be my greatest joy, then I have to love getting to know its author and coming to understand what he is offering. That's what makes the Torah a joy. It's because getting to know Yahweh and coming to understand what he's offering, and that is the part of it that is so enjoyable.
Oh, that's a huge, obviously that's what takes all the weight off.
You know,
I'm not earning anything here. You know, you're not earning anything here.
I'm enjoying the relationship. I'm enjoying getting to know Yahweh better. I'm enjoying coming to understand what he's offering more. And what we find is a God that wants to give us life, to restore us, to nurture us, who is compassionate to us. That's the joy of the Torah. So this statement, which is where we're going to start again in a week, this statement is the summation of the Torah. It's the source of mercy. It's the source of life. It is the means to be restored and to grow and to nurture. And that is why Dod finds the Torah the greatest joy in all of life. I do too. We all do. It is fun. You know, Larry, we're still recording, but the program is no longer broadcasting. One of the letters that, you know, I get a lot is, you know, I want to thank you for sharing this, because it's, you know, helped me come to know Yahweh, and it's like you were doing a job, and that you devoted your time to do this job to help somebody else. It was your service, you know, and the reason that's just so uncomfortable for me is that studying the Torah is the greatest joy in life.
Like this big pleasure, and you're sharing
right.
It. Yeah, it's not like you're recruiting church members.
No,
if
somebody threw you the biggest party in the universe and was there, and you just had the just total fun in this party, and then you shared the experience of the party, would you expect someone who said, "Wow, that's a really cool party. I really appreciate your devotion to duty." and you know, call the work you did.
I'll get people asking, can I share these notes? I say, man, those notes are there for you to share, buddy. You know, that's what
they're not about. This is
no,
our
it's
party.
Not mine.
We're
I
see,
you know, I seldom, you know, give Yada credit on them, honestly. I said, you know, why would I care?
Yeah,
no,
right,
I don't
right.
care. You know,
right.
And I know you
right.
don't care. I don't
no,
care.
No, I don't care.
You know, it's be out there floating around, you know, and somebody who wants the truth is going to grab
on.
Oh,
man. In fact, if it was the more it's anonymous, the happier I am. And, the you know, if it's a translation of something Yahweh said and you're sharing it, I am a million times happier if you're sharing it because you've incorporated it, that it's part of the fabric of your being, that you understand it, and you're sharing it. This is Yahweh's testimony, and having nothing to do with me, it makes it vastly more empowering.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's
right.
People don't understand. I mean, they go out there with religious books, and they throw these quotes down all day long. You know, nearly every translation that you're breaking down has the word, the possible options it could mean.
Right.
You take your pick. And, I mean, you know, you're showing the actual word and how it's being used and even why.
Right.
Something you're never going to find in religious material because basically they just make them up.
But,
you know, I mean,
you know, the purpose of doing that, Larry, is to write myself out of it. Because
yeah, well,
if you're showing the word and then you're sharing the meanings of the word, then you become irrelevant. Then the individual can go and verify that for themselves.
Yeah, and that's all true, too. But it's also a verification process,
of course.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're going to sit down and read what they, you know, call the third commandment, I think we've knocked the hell out of commandment at this point.
Right.
But let's say, you know, what they call. And then you look at the words, and you look what they mean, and you see this, thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. You think, who wrote this?
Right.
You know, did he have an IQ of less than 60? I mean,
yeah,
this
that?
Is horrible.
Yeah, how
right?
do you get how do you get that out of those words?
They
you
just
know?
Made it up. They just
yeah,
make
you,
it up.
There isn't any one of those words.
I know.
There, I mean, yeah, there's one name. They got one word right.
Yeah, but they didn't get the name right. Did
well, of course, they didn't
you know?
Get the name right, but they got the word right for
Shem.
Name. You know,
yeah,
I think
right.
Larry, it just all boils down to this: whether it's translating the Torah. Studying the Torah, reading the Torah, enjoying the Torah, whatever part of it, or sharing the Torah, it's the greatest joy of our lives. That's why we do it.
That's the greatest thing I've ever done. I
yeah,
admit it.
Thing.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what it is, you know, and people have a tendency, you know, to really go, wow, this is some great stuff. And it is.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's Yahweh's words. And
yep.
when you can throw them out there, when you can show somebody that mathematically the universe
right.
was created in 6 days,
right?
Example,
that's cool. Well, that's
you're
cool.
a giant, right
yeah,
there.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm going to give you an example. Right now, I'm you know, I spent all that time writing Roman history, and now I'm having to write a little of the history of the church. Because you know, I'm trying to explain
well, hand in glove with the
yeah,
Roman
I'm trying
Empire.
To explain the Daniel prophecies. When I'm doing that. I'm really antsy. There's really no fun in it. Now, I will tell you that occasionally, and maybe it's once a day, twice a day, I'll come up with something in Roman history or church history that says, oh, my God, is that ever the smoking gun? That's how it all fits together. That's why God hates it. That's why he calls them one. And they all find things to say, okay, yeah, that's why I'm glad that I did this research. But the difference between providing the research that helps someone understand the passage that the prophecy that Yahweh is revealing on a 1 to 10 scale of fun, that's a 2, and I get answers.
Yeah, I have
okay.
to tell you, I do enjoy showing corruptions and where they came from. I do.
Yeah, I do too. I'm not saying it's not it's unpleasant. It's just on a 1 to 10 scale, it's a 2. Translating the Torah, translating Yirmiyah, translating Yashayah, translating Malachi or Zechariah, oh, that's a 10.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, but then you know also when you're doing that, you're every one of these. I mean, you're saying translating Yirmiyah, and you do that, and you're going, wow. He even says he's talking to the people that are called Christians today.
Yeah.
He's totally described them, and this is exactly
right.
what they do.
Correct.
And you know, I mean, it's there's a lot of prophecy in these translations
right.
that aren't considered
exactly.
prophecy.
Like, would you, I mean, I'll give you a comparison. When I'm translating Paul's letters for Questioning Paul, mm-hmm. it's work. It's just work.
Oh, God.
When I compare them to Yahweh's
testimony. It's like trying to do
yeah,
the Quran.
Work. It's work.
You know?
That's work.
I can't believe you didn't shoot yourself.
But when I go and now translate Chabaouk, well, that's fun. And even
yeah,
when Chabaouk
yeah.
is talking about something that's negative, like Paul,
mm-hmm. yeah.
it's still fun. Because
oh, yeah.
Because with Chabaouk, what you find is that the way Yahweh brought up the predictions about him and the condemnation about Paul, he's poking fun. I mean, he's really, if you're on
yeah,
the inside,
yeah. get some of those
Yahweh,
writing tools and that stuff you write on and
oh,
make those
yeah.
letters, which
oh,
is
yeah.
what they turn to scripture.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, his fascination with the male yeah. genitalia, and, you know, it's just...
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't even question him.
Oh, they don't even
question
him, and his name means question him. So when you read that, I bust up laughing. You know, just say, okay. That's funny.
I'll bring the rock to argue against him. I'll bring
yeah,
the rock.
That's right. Yeah, he even said I'll bring the rock to... I know. And so you read this
yeah.
stuff, and even the negative stuff is funny. I mean... God has a
you know, and that's where people begin, you know, it's, you know, this question of, and that goes back
yes.
to that question of, do you
right.
believe in God? What do you mean, do I believe in him, you know? I mean,
yeah,
are you kidding
when,
at
when
this
he starts
point?
Using, I'm going to bring the rock against him, and that's, and that is Shimon's nickname. And he talks about his affair with Timothy and his fascination with the male genitalia when he says that he hates circumcision, but yeah, he circumcised Timothy. You know, you don't question him, and that's what Shaul's name means, is to question. Once you see, you know, how much of that stuff do you have to see before you say, oh, okay, I get it already. Not only is he God, he's a really cool dude.
Yeah, well, yeah, and, you know, it's all over the place. Even all these different corruptions he talks about, and every one of them happened, by the way.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you sit there and you go, do you believe in God? You know, and then you look at a religion that says, do you believe in God? Like, that's the ultimate, that's going to make it, that you believe in God. Well, okay, you either popped out of thin air or something created you. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it wouldn't take much to make me believe that there's a God. I mean, I
yeah.
knew it when I was a kid, and I was being raised by atheists.
Yeah.
I knew there
yeah.
had to be a God. I said, this
yeah.
is ridiculous.
Yeah.
As a
but
child,
I
knew better.
Who would have thought that God could turn out to be so likable?
Well, no, I would not have thought for a million years
that the creator God of the universe, because I was an agnostic for a while, I would not have thought ever that he could be a cool dude, that he'd be funny. It would never dawned on me that he would be approachable, relaxed, comfortable, funny. It just didn't even dawn on me that was possible.
Well, it didn't dawn on me that he wanted to walk with me. I thought, you know, he walked with Noah. Noah must have been all that. Noah
yeah.
just listened to him. I
right.
mean, that's what happened there. And you know, I, again, for the people listening, you know, I put it in my mind, and, you know, we all need to kind of put it in our minds. You know, he took one family, because of Noah, out of an area. He took Abraham out of how big was Babylon?
An entire nation. Actually, a combination of three nations. Babylon,
at least
Syria,
a million people or something. He took one guy out of that.
One guy.
You know, and
was one guy sufficient? I'm going to tell you, if Larry were the only guy that Yahweh developed a relationship with, he'd have still created the universe.
I believe that's true.
Yeah.
I do believe that's true. But I'm just saying, you know, that's where we got to think of it. So when we see groups of people doing something, we know.
You know, so many people write me and they'll say, you know, it's lonely because this... coming to know Yahweh is so different than everybody's religious situation that the moment I came to embrace Yahweh, I was ostracized from my family, and it's lonely. I don't find it that.
And that's what Yah said would happen, but yeah.
Yeah, he said that would happen, and I remember I went through a short period like that. I do not find it the least bit lonely.
I don't either.
Really
I don't even care. I don't.
No.
I don't care. I, you
no.
know, I know that
my relationship
the walking,
with Yah and the few brothers and sisters that we interact with are absolutely more than I could ever want. I am.
Oh, well,
I am,
we're in a situation where we can
lonely.
Interact.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
right
never
across
lonely.
The globe.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Yeah, I'm always there. You know, Yah's there. It's never sense loneliness. Never sense isolation.
I
get frustrated, you know, when the religious zealots write. You know, you occasionally get frustrated. But
yeah, I can get a little upset. But then what I do is not take them real serious. I kind of laugh at them and ask them, did your grandma think like this? I mean,
yeah, really.
You know, they get really upset. I poke at them a little
bit. Yeah, so this last one I end up saying, so you're the next Moshe. So we're going to all need to add a book right there at the end of Malachi. We're going to have a book bearing your name.
Yeah, and why did we have the Messiah when we had you all this time? You know,
when I was talking about what God had said, she said, you know, so, you know, why did God even bother with you when he brought his son? My comment was,
yeah, exactly.
What I'm telling you here is exactly what he said. So... I am simply a messenger here. I'm telling you what he said. I know you don't like what he said, but nonetheless, that's what he said. And you know,
well, a religious
initiate.
He didn't
say anything that isn't in the Torah and prophets. So, you know, you didn't actually need him to come.
You read the
Torah and prophets,
you'd
have everything that he had to say.
Yeah, right. No religious initiate. No religious initiate. Would like Yahweh's words because they're, you know, they're as anti-religious as it's going to get. And,
if we did not have any part of the eyewitness accounts, if we didn't have Yahu Kanan or Matanyahu, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be one iota impoverished.
No, and I think, let me tell you something. I think that there's a reason. I've thought about this. I think that there's a reason that the rabbis got a hold of all the Hebrew witness writings and burned them. Because we're not to focus.
That's
he tells us
exactly.
not to focus on his
right.
his physical manifestation.
Right.
He
exactly.
says so.
Yeah, that's one of the things, by the way, that I like about our conversation, our relationship. There's a lot of things I do like about it, Larry. One of the things I really like about it is that you're one of the very few people who is not fixated on Yahusha.
No.
I'm not. I'm not.
No.
I see right through him.
No, I mean, I was, you know, for 6 months.
Yes,
you know,
I was too, for about 6 months. And then you realize, wait a minute. What he wants us to do is look right through him. He wants us to look at him as if he's the word of Yahweh. And once you recognize that, why don't you just read the word of Yahweh?
Right.
Torah the diminished manifestation set apart. Why would you focus on the diminished manifestation when you can focus on Yahweh himself? And so I happen to like that. I think that one of the great problems of Christianity is they turned a physical man into the totality of God, and they don't look beyond him.
Well, they overturn God's words.
Yeah, of course.
And they don't listen to this man. Yeah, they don't listen to what Yahusha had to say to begin with.
Yeah.
They all run to Paul's letters.
Right.
Otherwise,
yeah,
they wouldn't.
The single most disastrous meeting in human history was the Council of Nicaea.
Oh, it was so
horrible. And the entire purpose of the Council of Nicaea
was to separate Yahusha from Yahweh. That's why they had to rename it.
Yeah, even beyond that, it was to turn their Jesus Christ into the totality of God so that he is equivalent to God. Yahusha is not equivalent to God.
No,
he is not the
totality
of God.
Part of me, according to Yahweh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Existing
but the purpose of the Nicene Council was to turn this man into the totality of God so they could have an entirely new religion. That was the purpose.
They did it.
They
certainly managed that.
And they did.
By doing so, they incorporated every pagan aspect. It's like Yahusha said, okay, here's the plan. After I'm gone, I'm going to send another guy to speak in opposition to everything I ever told you, build buildings and plaster pagan sayings all over.
And by the way, he's your age. He's available right now, but I didn't choose him. But he's going to claim that I chose him. You know, I chose the 12 of you, but don't disregard the ones I chose. This guy, who's available, I'm not going to meet with, but he's going to claim that I chose him to have 99.9% of the world. And he's going to come up with a completely different message that contradicts everything that I said. But yet his message is going to be the Bible.
Yeah, named.
And it's going to be the New Testament, so we can replace that Old Testament.
The very concept of a New Testament.
Yeah, this very Torah that I told you that nothing is going to change, that nothing is going to change in this Torah, that even the strokes of the letters are going to stay in full effect. And don't you even dream of the idea that I came to do away with it. He's going to say that I came to do away with it. And people are going to believe him. You know, what the saddest line in the entire witness writings is Yahusha, and it's part of the Instruction on the Mount. You know, he says, I came in my Father's name, and you don't believe me. You don't trust me. And yet someone else will come in their own name, and them you'll believe.
Ah, that would be Paulos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He who is lowly and little. I need to make an entire note about names. You know, Yahweh places all this this emphasis on names. I mean, there's not one name that didn't have a meaning.
You know, Yahweh refers to as
lowly
is the horn that is the beast. You know, the horn that is the beast. He describes that horn. You know the term that he uses to describe the term?
No,
the
horn. No.
Lowly and little.
No. Lowly and little.
Lowly and little.
I gotta love it. I gotta love it.
Lowly and little.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's, by the way, why Turkey can't be the nation that he comes out of, because Turkey is not lowly and little economically or in size or in population. It has to be a nation that's lowly and little.
Okay. Well, Constantine, I mean, he was that Eastern Empire of Rome. I mean, that's where it was all.
You know, though, actually, Constantine ruled for most of his life out of Rome, and you know, his battle to become emperor was just 8 miles from Rome. So he was a Roman Empire emperor that renamed Byzantium after himself. But you know, he isn't just the Eastern; he's collectively Rome.
No, I believe that too.
Yeah, he is collectively Rome. But lowly and little. Everything that is ascribed to the beast that is the Torahless one is identical to Paul.
Yeah, then you've got Chabawak's letter that was written 666 years before Paul's letter.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Unreal. Today.
This is unreal.
So
66
say, okay.
years, rather.
No,
yeah.
666.
Or 666.
The thing that 66 years is Babylon existed for 66 years.
That's right.
Babylon was a country for exactly 66 years. Chabauk was written 666 years before Paul wrote his first letter.
Written just prior to Babylon. Yeah. So, yeah, you got all that. You have all this, everything, 6666. That's going to be his number even, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then his number also happens to say, you know, the masses of Allah. you got the religious heads of this lowly and little place.
You know, I hate to make a real mistake.
You can't say Yahweh, but you can say Allah.
I made a horrendous mistake in my earlier writings. I said that the Torahless one's religion is going to be Islam. It's not true. It's Christianity.
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be Christianity.
It's obvious. He is going to be a Christian.
But he'll have strong ties to Islam.
Yes, he will. Yeah, he will have strong ties to Islam, but he will be a Christian.
Yeah.
The Antichrist is going to be identical to the caricature that Christians have of their Christ. I mean, it's going to be really confusing for them.
Well, I can tell you, I'm an Antichrist, and,
and that's
the way it's going to stand, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Right to the end.
All right, Larry. I've enjoyed doing this with you.
It's really fun
give and take.
It's always a nice way to start the Shabbat. It really is, and I appreciate you.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Yeah, fun having the discussion. Thank you.
All right. Well, you have a good night. Appreciate it.
Good night. Bye.
Bye-bye.